Hi, my name's Salma. My whole life I've been hyper aware of my mortality. At least once a day, I'll think about how fleeting my life will be compared to Earth's timeline. I mean, even if I live until I'm like 120, that'll still be an insignificant blink compared to all the years that came before I was born and all the ones that'll come long after I die. This is why I spend most of my time reading. I don't want to just live one life. It's like George Martin writes in A Dance with Dragons. A reader lives 1,000 lives before he dies, but the man who never reads lives only one. A few years ago, I came across a picture that read, "You will die before you read every book you've ever encountered." That was the moment my escapist hobby turned into an all-consuming mission, and I'd like to bring you along this obsessive journey. So, every Tuesday, I post a review of the book I read that week. And once a month, I bring on a special guest to talk about books we've read. You're listening to the 15-Minute Book Club. Welcome, and I hope you enjoy. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about A Concise Chinese-English Dictionary for Lovers by Chinese-born British author Chaolu Guo. So I first heard about it on the BBC World Service Book Club podcast. I link that in the description because it was an interview with the author herself where she talks about the book and her personal journey in learning English and all sorts of fun stuff. The author talks about her journey across different cultures and living in Europe and sort of navigating these differing cultural nuances. It's all very interesting. The reason the novel interested me was because I'm an ESOL teacher. So ESOL stands for English to Speakers of Other Languages. And I've been an ESOL teacher for 8 years now, coming on 9 years actually. And I find conversations about language learning very fascinating. I actually wrote a research paper last year about something called fossilizations, which in English language teaching or in second language teaching in general, that basically means when someone is learning a second language and they, you know, they've been learning for a really long time, but they still make grammatical mistakes. So for example, if someone in English were to say, "I want chair," there's a grammatical error in there, which is that they're not using an article "a," right? So it should be, "I want a chair." But if that's fossilized, it means that it's a recurring error. However, it doesn't hinder meaning. So I did a research project on that last year, and I wrote a whole lot about it, which I won't get into right now, but I will link it in the description in case you're interested and would like to read more about that. So that's why I found this book really interesting, because it's presented as the journal of a young Chinese woman who moves to the United Kingdom for a year to learn English. In the beginning, it's written in broken English, and the more her language starts to improve, fewer grammar mistakes she makes in her writing. And so she falls in love with an English bloke, and her journal is basically her journey through all of that. You get to see all of these really interesting cultural clashes between them. She tells him that she really wants to see his house, and he says, "Be my guest." But she thinks that he means come live with me, so she ends up moving in with him. And at that point, they've only known each other, I think, like 2 weeks or something. Another really interesting cultural clash between them is their ideas on gender equality. So they're out at some point, and they get the bill at this restaurant, and I think the bill is like £40, and he puts down £20 and then says, "Okay, so we'll split it. I'll pay half and you pay half." And she's sort of really taken aback and shocked, and they have this whole conversation where she says to him, like, you're the man, like, you have to pay. He points out that they have to be equal in the relationship, and there's this whole conversation about what equality actually means. And it's really interesting that in each chapter, in each journal entry, because she's carrying around this Chinese English dictionary all the time, she's looking up all of these different words, and at the top there's the word of the chapter or the word of the journal entry, and for that chapter it was equality. And it's just, I don't know, it just makes you really think of the different dimensions of words, not just what they linguistically mean, but what their cultural significance is. The third really interesting cultural clash between them is their differing ideas on what privacy is. So while he's traveling, she finds his old letters and journals and like his old diaries and stuff, and she rummages through them and reads all of them. And then when he comes back, they're having this conversation and she casually mentions something that she read in his diary, and he says, you read my diary? And he's like completely taken aback, and he tells her that this is an invasion of his privacy, and she's sort of unsure why he's causing a fuss, because in her mind they're together in a romantic relationship and there shouldn't be any secrets between them, or there shouldn't be such a thing as privacy. So their ideas on boundaries are very interesting. So one of the things I really liked about this is her perspective on the gerund. So English teachers will know what this is. The gerund is ing at the end of a verb. So like walking, reading. So the gerund, or like the progressive tense, it's used in different situations. So if you're using it in the present tense, like I am walking, it's usually used to say that you're doing this at the moment of speaking. Whereas if you use the simple present, like I walk, it's usually used to refer to something that is a habit or a general truth, like I walk every day. But if I said I am walking, it means that I'm walking in the moment of speaking. So they're both present tenses, but the gerund, or the continuous present tense, is used to talk about the moment of speaking, and the simple present tense is used to talk about habits or repeated actions. And she talks about this in the book, but also on the podcast as well. She talks about how when she was learning English, she found the continuous or the progressive tense to be really stupid and really useless. And she says, why do we have to use ing? Why can't I just say I walk or I go, and then it'll convey the idea that I'm trying to say? She navigates English tenses in a way that I find really familiar from having watched my own students, but also it's giving me this really interesting inner look to what's actually going on in her mind. And I mean, it's really helping me garner some semblance of empathy for my students to kind of see things from their perspective. Probably my favorite thing about this novel is how the author shows white privilege in such a subtle way. So for example, three recurring fights. One of them is about Tibet, one is about food, and one is about career. So the one about Tibet, they're having this back and forth argument where he's sort of like talking about why China has been such a bully to Tibet, and he says, oh, look how many Tibetans you've killed. And she's completely outraged by this, and she says, I didn't kill any Tibetans, nor have any Chinese people that I've known in my life killed any Tibetans. And he talks about how the Chinese government has killed a lot of Tibetans, and she sort of throws back in his face that the BBC only reports the bad side of China. And just seeing sort of that political angle of their relationship and how they view things politically is fascinating, where he's trying to kind of take the moral high ground. And she's kind of like calling him out on the fact that the British Empire was no better than China. And when they talk about food, so he's a vegetarian, and anytime they talk about food, he tells her how she's the enemy of animals. And he asks her, like, how many animals do you think you've killed in your life? And he says, you Chinese eat anything, even endangered species, and that even if dinosaurs roam the forests of China, someone would want to see what a dinosaur tasted like. And he accuses her of having no sense of protecting nature. And she points out that even plants are a part of nature, and that if he's so worried about protecting nature, he should probably just stop eating altogether. Again, he's taking this moral high ground that I've seen quite a bit in pop culture where people who grew up in cultures that don't have meat eating as part of their culture or a significant part of their society, they just don't understand the significance of it. And the last argument that they have that I find that really resonated with me and I thought was really interesting is she has a lot of ambition and talks about how she wants to improve her English and establish a good career in China. And he's super against ambition and he claims not to care about money or fame. And she responds and says that that's because you're a white Englishman living in England and you own property and you have social security. You are the boss of yourself, so you have dignity, because he's basically self-employed. And she says, I don't have anything in your country. I have to struggle to get these things. And I thought that was so clever how, again, like, I don't know if the author intended to do this, but it was such a clever way of showing how, again, this dichotomy or this juxtaposition between someone who comes from a country where you have to kind of fight for the most basic things in life, and someone else who's sort of like got these things and takes them for granted doesn't really understand why she's so ambitious. And it's not necessarily ambition per se, it's more of this pursuit for survival, but he just doesn't see it because he doesn't recognize his own privilege. Another thing I thought was interesting in that sort of cultural difference between them is he gets a lot of headaches, and at one point, he's like in bed and he has a headache, and she says to him, "Well, the reason you have all of these headaches is because you have an imbalance in your qi." And he sort of perks up and he asks her to tell him more about qi, and she starts to explain in Chinese medicine like what types of imbalancement in qi there are. And it's just, I thought I laughed so hard when I read this part because it was this like exoticization of Eastern medicine that a lot of people in the West have. And he sort of like asks her, "Oh, tell me more." And about, like, he tokenizes this whole idea of her being Chinese and like knowing about these like Chinese medicine hacks. And I just thought it was really funny. The last thing about their cultural differences that I found interesting was how he's sort of like, he's really surprised that she hasn't traveled so much. And he says to her, "Oh, you should go to Europe." And he starts suggesting all these places. And she says, "You don't understand my visa situation. It's extremely limited. And I'm from China. And I'm not of the free world." And she says she only has a student visa for a year and that she's not able to leave London and go and live somewhere else with trees and sun. And although that sounds really beautiful, she needs to show these embassy officers bank statements to apply for a European visa, and that these bank statements will never qualify. And she says to him, "You are a free man of the free world, but I am not free like you." And at no point does he ever kind of take a step back and try to see things from her perspective. All of their arguments and all of their conversations, it seems like he's super stubborn and like adamant that he kind of patronizes her a lot, I feel. And he doesn't seem to really see things from her perspective. And the only time that he does listen to her, like truly listen to her, is when they have that conversation about the qi imbalancement. Only then it feels like he just listens to her because she's fitting that narrative that he has in his mind about her being, this sort of this exotic Eastern woman that knows something about like natural Eastern medicine. So when I keep asking myself who I'd like to be in the universe of this novel, I don't think I'd want to be any of the characters, but they do at some point go to Wales, to the countryside, and the descriptions of the countryside, so magnificent, especially when you put them next to the descriptions of London, because they're living in Hackney. This juxtaposition of city life versus nature, it just makes nature seem so much more appealing and holistic, and that's probably what I'd like to be. If I could be anything in this novel, I'd want to be the countryside or nature in Wales. So I would recommend reading this book. It's super interesting, especially if you're an ESOL teacher. This is probably the one for you. Thanks for listening to the 15 Minute Book Club. If you want to be part of the conversation, follow 15 Min Book Club on Instagram. For all the books and materials mentioned in this episode, check the description. And remember, keep reading. because who knows, I might die tomorrow.